Committee on Public Safety. Colleagues, today is February 22nd, 2016. We're convened for the purpose of work sessions on Department of Justice reports, as well as House Bill 4075A, House Bill 1571A, and House Bill 1523A, and an Oregon Youth Authority grant. We will not be receiving any testimony on any of these. So, Mr. Borden, would you like to tee it up for us?
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee, before you is the Department of Justice, their Child Support Enforcement Automated System Information Technology Project. This is actually a budget request. As you may recall, the agency was here during interim joint ways and means in January of 2016 with a report on this project and its budget consequences. The agency is now here with their formal budget request. The project's schedule and budget have changed since the legislatively adopted budget from the 2015 session, and they're here to, with their request, the agenda for this particular item is that this subcommittee had some questions from January, so the agency is going to do a thorough overview of the project and provide an update of the changes that they have since the January report. And then Bob Cummings of our office, who is at the end of the dais, will review the Joint Information Management Technology recommendations that went through that committee. And then we'll talk more about the budget request and recommendations, if that's all right, Chair.
Sounds great. Mr. Buss?
Thank you. Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Fred Buss. I am the Deputy Attorney General. I'm here to testify concerning the Department of Justice Child Support Systems Project. The Attorney General asked me to come here and to convey to you the importance of this project to her, the Department, and to the people of Oregon. This project, which replaces the Division's old legacy system, will ease the burden on all of those involved in child support. In order to go into more depth, I would like to turn this presentation over to the subject matter experts, Kate Richardson and Karen Coleman. If you don't mind, I'll excuse myself.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kate Cooper Richardson. I'm the director of the Oregon Child Support Program and Division Administrator for the Division of Child Support at the Department of Justice. To my right here is Karen Coleman. If you go ahead and say for the record.
For the record, as Kate stated, my name is Karen Coleman. Good afternoon.
And Karen is the project executive, and we'll be swapping out this this presentation as we go through. If it turns. We'll do it this way. All right. Just as a reminder, as Mr. Borden indicated, we will be just giving you a little bit of background again on this project so you remember where we've been. And then, as you know, we're well underway. And we did report to you in January, and we'll be filling you in on why we are here today with our budget request and where we're going from here. Just a reminder that our current system is one of the oldest in the nation, and we have had multiple problems with it over the years as it's just outliving its usefulness and can't meet the needs of the current program. It's based on a COBOL system and is considered, I think, one of the oldest in the nation, if not the oldest. And I want to just point out one fact here, that the system's unable to accommodate receipt of more than $2 million in payment a day. And yes, we do run into that problem now on an increasing basis. We collect more than $365 million a year, and it flows in at various times. And we have, when we hit this threshold with the project, or excuse me, with the current system, we have to do some tricking of the system to sort of reset it a little bit so we can take in all the money that we are supposed to in that day. So a child support system, what is it? It is not just a spreadsheet here. It is a data exchange system. It's a document generation and management, and because we are doing legal documents all the time and letters, and we send out thousands and thousands of documents a year. It's case management and workflows. We have more than 200,000 cases that we are managing on a daily basis, and all of those have legal time frames, many parties involved, and so managing it through a long life and with a child support case that is throughout the child's age of minority, and it can go much longer than that, of course, if there are any arrears due to be paid even after the child attains the age of majority. So we are managing cases that are still open, but are very old, so we've got a lot on our plate for many, many years. Business intelligence and compliance reporting, we are a federal program, and of course when you're handling money and you're handling private information, including federal tax information, we have a lot of reporting, auditing, and other pieces that need to go along. Of course, in the management of the cases itself, the business intelligence is really important to help us distinguish which tools are the best tools to apply in a particular case. Automated case action alerts are part of that case management, and if they weren't automated, believe me, we would have to have a lot more people on board in order to keep track of all those cases. And then accounting, of course, with the collection I mentioned, with the disbursement, with the multiple accounts that we have to track, the accounting is very important and must be maintained for many, many years. The replacement itself, as you know, since 2010, we've been working on a long-term plan to replace the current mainframe system with, and here our background preparation that we have taken. The feasibility study report was from started back in November of 2011. That's required by the federal government, and of course was our business plan. That took more or nearly a year to complete. We did a business process reengineering also with the sanction of the legislature to make sure that we are designing a new system for business processes for the future, not for our current system and the workarounds we've had to put in place there. And then we went through planning approval with the federal government and with the legislature, which was approved in the 2013 legislative session. And we've been in planning and implementation since then, with the approval through the 2015 session, also with funding for the. Our goals here are, not surprisingly, to, of course, increase support collections for our families, recoveries for state agencies, and then really is avoiding the liability that we could have by having a system failure. That's been a huge and increasing part of the goals for this this new project and this new system. We have, it's a certified system, and we have compliance with federal and state laws and regulations and data security that we are not able to keep up with our current system. And of course, we want to make sure that we have all the tools that are appropriate for the next generation of the child support program. Just a window into some of our collections. I mentioned what's passed through to families. We pass through about 92% of all of our collections to families directly, but we also still have an important recovery for other state agencies. As you'll see here, $21 million going to DHS, Oregon Youth Authority, and the Oregon Health Authority. And, of course, we also recover costs for through TANF recoveries that helped to fund our own program in the last biennium. That was $16 million. So our new system will be based on the web interface technology. It's not going to look like a green screen anymore. I'll say that when we have new employees come in, they think they're looking at an MS-DOS system, because they've only seen, most of our younger employees have only ever seen in old movies or something. We're having a transfer hybrid situation here, where we're taking the base system from California as our model and the base functionality and design, and and also some functions from the Michigan system and the New Jersey system. All three of these systems are current, have gone through a modernization of their own, and we will be bringing in different pieces from each of those. Thus, the functionality, we will be building our own system, the Oregon system. It's going to be, or it is, being built by a contracted vendor with industry experience, that is Deloitte, and we will own that. It won't be a Deloitte product. It's Oregon's product, and we plan to sustain it and maintain it on a go-forward basis. So I'm going to hand it off here to Karen, who is living and breathing this project every day, so she can tell you in detail where we are right now.
Just one moment. Senator Bates has a question.
Thank you. Just a quick question and a comment. We're seeing the same thing in DHS on the one system in a very similar situation. There's two things they couldn't tell us there, and I'd like to see if you could give us some answers. One is, what's the cost of maintaining the system? They don't have no idea. They don't know what it is. And secondly, can they put those, they've got two or three pieces from the states trying to put together too. And to bring those pieces together, can they really be integrated and work together? That's number two. I guess the other one's number three is I'm glad you're going to be maintaining it in state. That money's not going to go to, you know, Illinois or Bangladesh someplace. We actually have people in state because we're going to be spending a lot of money on this. And I like to see that money stay in state and build that technology in the state. So I appreciate that very much. They did not give me a straight answer on that. So thank you.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, Senator Bates, I will take your questions out of order here, I think. Going to the second question, which was the integration question, I believe. As I mentioned, we will be bringing the functionality, and we are transferring system. We are bringing in system code and documentation so that we can examine it. And when I say we, I'm talking the whole project team, and that's Deloitte. Believe me, it's not us, to look at that system code, but we will be building our own system on that. So we're not actually integrating the specific code, but building a common system with the functionality from that. Karen, do you want to add to that at all?
Yes, I will, if you don't mind, please. Senator Bates, that includes some meetings with our agency partners, including DHS and Oregon Health Authority, on interfacing or interoperability between the child support system and their systems as well. I'll speak, if you don't mind, to your third question as well about keeping the work here in Oregon. One of the things that Oregon did in our RFP and follow-on negotiations with Deloitte is to ask that our Oregon Department of Justice developers be embedded with their developers as well. I think you may have heard me talk about that before. So they'll actually be on the floor with Deloitte's team participating in the design and development of this system so that when it does come project closeout and time for Deloitte to go home, we have experienced DOJ programmers that are available to maintain and operate the system on a going forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you.
Please continue.
All right. Karen.
Okay, so I'm going to take you from where we were to where we are and where we're going on the project day to day. Our primary focus right now is in working with the Legislative Fiscal Office on our readiness assessment approval and providing additional documentation, including the master project schedule. We had to integrate a number of schedules from our project management contractor, our quality assurance contractor, and Deloitte, our development contractor, into an integrated master schedule. So that's something that the Legislative Fiscal Office has been waiting on. We just recently baselined that and sent a copy over to Bob Cummings and John Borden. Of course, with their busy schedules here in the legislature, they have not had an opportunity to review that yet. So following the session, we will plan a work session with them to walk them through the development of the integrated schedule and address any questions that they may have related to that schedule, and continue to work on those budget notes from the 2015 session as well. Next slide, please, Kate. We want to assure you that the project is being managed with project management principles, we adhere to the PMBOK practices. Also, if we can go back just a moment to our procurement process, we worked in partnership with DAS on fixed price, deliverable-based contracts for all four of our contracts. And what most folks don't recognize as well, because of our federal oversight, those contracts must be reviewed and approved by our federal office prior to the agency countersigning each of those contracts. That provides a great deal of insight for us because of their experience with other child support programs around the nation. They're able to look at the price of those contracts and tell us whether or not those contractors are doing business in another state for far less or doing something similar in another state, but the pricing for Oregon is different. So that oversight was extremely helpful as we finalized all four of our contracts. All of the contractors are on board, and look at me, I've already skipped ahead to the next slide. Okay, sorry about that. So all four of our contractors are on board, and did get out of order. Sorry about that. There, here comes the nerves.
Doing fine.
Thank you. Thank you. So I'm going to go a little off slides, and it'll all come together for you, I assure you. So we'll go to oversight, and then I'll come back to the contractor. So oversight on the project, we do have an executive steering committee that provides oversight, as well as the federal office that I was just speaking briefly about, our partnership with the Legislative Fiscal Office, and of course, our partnership with the state CIO's office. In addition to that, we have a quality assurance contractor and then a federally required independent verification and validation contractor. So they are the eyes and ears of the federal office here on the ground and are also reporting on the work of the quality assurance contractor. So not just the day-to-day oversight, but they're also reporting to the federal office. What is the quality assurance quality on the project, and what are they reporting out on, and how are they helping us ensure that at the end of the project we have received a quality product? Thank you, Kate. So here's getting into the project organization. What you see is a very high-level overview of the project staff. In green, you'll see all of the state staff, so that's agency, DOJ staff. And then a stakeholders advisory board is also in green, and that's made up of our agency partners from other state agencies, our primary stakeholders, and those agencies that we'll be interfacing with now and in the future. In blue represents Maximus, our project management contractor. In yellow or goldenrod, you have CSG Government Solutions, who is providing quality management services to the project. In that small box, and don't let the size fool you, is Deloitte Consulting, our development contractor, who by the end of the project will have over 100 developers here assisting with the design, development, and implementation. And then in the purple box includes the oversight bodies for the project. Here's information related to the steering committee. Again, it is made up of our key stakeholders and agency partners. Its structure was approved upon development by our federal office. It was important for them that we did have key stakeholders and primarily those agencies that we will be interfacing with in the future so that they were at the table hearing about project plans, dates, project timelines, what is required of them in terms of continued interfacing on the mainframe system, and then looking forward to interfacing and exchanging data in the future state of the system. As you know, many of those agency partners, the Department of Human Services, Oregon Health Authority, all have projects going on at the same time. So having them at the table for coordination and insight into how our projects intersect and how we impact one another was an important strategy from us from the beginning to ensure that we were all at the table in these joint conversations to avoid delay of our project or their projects. So here is a high-level timeline that just talks about starting from design through project closeout, and there's going to be slides coming up that's going to give greater detail. This one provides high-level that gives you an idea of when we'll be entering into each of the project phases. There's that slide I've been searching for. So major project activities and what has been completed since we were with you last. We have received our stage gate endorsement from the state CIO's office, but continue our work, as I mentioned earlier, with the Legislative Fiscal Office on the readiness assessment approval. Since Maximus joined us over a year ago, again, Maximus is our project management contractor, they joined us and assisted the agency and the project team in development of all of our foundational project documents. Since those have been completed and CSG Government Solutions, our quality assurance contractor, joined us, CSG looked at all of those foundational documents and provided a QC review report on each of those. Since that time, we have worked with Maximus to update those project plans based on the feedback from the quality assurance contractor. So each of those has been updated, taking their observations and recommendations into consideration to strengthen the project governance structure. Also, SLI, Global Solutions, is our IVNV, our independent verification and validation contractor. They were recently on site to complete their initial IVNV review report. We have received that, and the agency just provided response to that on the 16th of February. That then goes back to SLI to do their final report to append the agency's responses to that. And once we receive the final report, that is the report that will be shared with our steering committee members, the Legislative Fiscal Office, and the Chief Information Office for their review to give them an idea from an independent federal perspective how the project is being set up and managed to date. And then finally, since Deloitte has arrived, and as a reminder, we signed our contract in August, but we did not onboard Deloitte to the project until October 5th. In that short period of time, they have completed their implementation plan and their schedule, which fed into our integrated master schedule, which is why we're just baselining that recently. But also, they have received the transfer code and documentation from the state of California, the state of Michigan, and the state of New Jersey, and have set up the source code library and have begun entering that code into the library in preparation for development this summer. They have also participated with the project team in setting up the joint application design and joint technical design sessions, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in the slides to follow. So as you can see, there is a great deal of work underway at this time related to the design and development.
Excuse me, Katie, yes. Turn. We're going to have to.
Okay, just a few slides, so I'll accelerate. You bet. Just the key points here, again, what are we focusing on is readiness assessment approval. We've had an initial code review of the code received from the other states, and we are reviewing that code review now to determine the quality of the development from the California-based system. Also, one point that has been exciting for our staff is the development of a proof of concept concept. What that is we've stood up the California-based system here in Oregon and are using that during our joint application design sessions to show staff California's base system functionality so that if that meets an Oregon requirement, we aren't modifying that. So it becomes a fit instead of a gap and will help minimize the need for modernizing or, excuse me, modifying the system to meet Oregon needs. So high-level overview of where we're going from here. Just talked a little bit about the JAD and JTD sessions. We'll begin system build, but not until September. Data conversion is starting early with some data cleanup activities now, and data mapping as well on its way. Early planning for data conversion, very important. And then we'll begin user acceptance testing in 2018. So Kate, I'm going to skip and go on to you.
Okay.
Unless there's any questions.
All right, and this is just to remind you why you're here. Well, you're here and we're here. Our funding structure, as you know, the feds pay two-thirds of this, and we've got our funds are being matched for the project from Article 11Q bonds and with the general fund debt service. And that was approved in the last two biennium, or last two big legislative sessions. So here's why we're back here today. As Karen mentioned, we've re-baselined. We've done this preliminary re-baselining of the system project, and as your memo does indicate, it will be re-baselined as the project goes through. But now that we've got more actual information about the deliverables, the costs, and when those deliverables are due, we've got more deliverables coming due in this biennium instead of the next, and that's why we're here before you today. So here's where the request is, and these numbers have been quite fluid as because of the timing of this session and where our project is. So I will defer always to the Legislative Fiscal Office and the numbers that they're using as we try to provide them as current as we've got. But we're looking for the additional project bond authority, the expenditure limitation for our other funds and federal funds, and then, of course, the updated debt service costs that would go along with the project bond authority. This is where our current project budget sits for this biennium, comparing the LAB to our current projections right now. You see a $12 million difference in total funds there. And then our budget comparison over the life of the project, there's an $11 million difference there on the projections over the life of the project. So you can see that a good deal of the deliverables are coming due in this biennium, and the increase we're looking for is a matter of timing more than anything else. I'll look for any questions.
Representative Rayfield.
Thank you so much. Thank you. So I wasn't here when this project initially got done, and so the language, you know, I mean, there's an $11.5 million increase of the total overall project costs, and the rationale, at least in the slideshow, basically says you could not precisely forecast all the areas of the system project. Did you know that at the time that this came forward? That hey, this budget's a little squishy, and it may increase, you know, did you guys know that at that time?
Co-Chair Shields, Co-Chair Rayfield, or Senator Rayfield, I think you heard him. Yes, indeed we did. And frankly, that is the matter of, or the situation with nearly all projects anyway. Because this is before procurements, before contracts, before all knowns, for instance, on the hosting estimate, we only can when you don't know what you're going to be building yet, it's hard to know exactly how much it's going to cost to build it. So there's kind of a chicken and egg going on there. We believe that our feasibility study report, which was our initial business case, came in quite accurate as far as our estimated costs, our contracts, our procurements and contracts with our vendors came in pretty much right on the nose on those. There are some additional costs that hadn't been anticipated, but we do fall within the to be expected range of certainty.
One follow-up. And at that time, did you, I assume you informed whoever was sitting on this dais that, hey, this could possibly increase in the future, and you gave a range possibly of how much that could be? You're shaking your head yes. And so the real question that I have is, going forward, using your terminology, are we going to have to re-baseline anytime in the future again, or is this the final cost that we will see for this project?
Co-Chair Shields, Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, yes, we will be rebaselining in the future because that is the nature of large IT projects. There are always variables that you don't know. When going forward, you do your best to estimate those, but something will change along the line. And that can go up and that can go down. But it will be re-baseline. And there are other things that the schedule, too, can make a difference. And so if there are other things that come at you that you don't anticipate or haven't been able to foresee on the schedule, time is money. And so sometimes a delay, even if it comes from outside, can increase costs. Is there anything you'd like to add to that, Karen?
Last follow-up.
Representative Rayfield.
I appreciate that is, and so we can expect the rebaseline in the future. Can you give us a hint as to a range, plus or minus, of what we might expect to see in the future?
Co-chairs, members of the committee, I don't know that I can give you a hint, or I'm prepared to do that. Of course, I could say that it could double in price, but I'm not going to say that because I don't expect that. We are working as best we can to keep it as close to our original estimates as we can. We don't want to have to return to the legislature. That said, we will always make that a cost-benefit analysis and come before you if there are changes that we need to, and then you as the policymakers and the funders can make a decision about what's best for the system, the project, and the families of Oregon.
Thank you.
LFO?
Bob would be great, unless there's other questions or co-chair.
Bob, do you have any remarks you wanted to make, or just
you mean on that specific question? For the record, my name is Bob Cummings. I'm with the LFO. Sorry. On that specific question, or for the JLCIMT?
Generally, I wasn't sure.
The second on the IMT recommendations, if I may, Mr. Co-Chair.
Yeah.
Okay. Co-chairs, members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is Bob Cummings. I'd like to briefly touch first on this idea of the funding. DOJ is required to come in at Stage Gate 2 and give estimates. Estimates at Stage Gate 2 are minus or plus 25%. They were required to do that because the federal government would not give us any money unless we had the full project approved. We knew those would be very squishy estimates at that point. At Stage Gate 3, it's minus or plus 10. And so I just want everyone to realize that the Stage Gate process expects changes from Stage Gate 2 to 3. Hopefully, there are not very many after that, but that was not a surprise to the LFO. Okay, that said, very briefly, because I've only got a few minutes here, DOJ came to JWIMT, JLCIMT, I'm sorry, the names changes each year, and the purpose of that committee is not a budget committee, but what we did quickly, the LFO, was we took a look at what they had done from Stage Gate 2 to 3, and identified what got done and what hadn't, and very briefly, the OSCIO office felt Stage Gate 3 requirements were met. The LFO had some concerns, and so, and it's not unusual. Understand that this project, the project schedule and the budget process and the Stage Gate things don't always line up perfectly. They're very difficult to get those in. And so DOJ had to come like the Oklahoma Land Rush, coming in at the end here, trying to get Stage Gate 3 done, trying to get their vendor on board, trying to get an RFP on board, trying not to run out of money all simultaneously. And it's not unusual for them to be some disconnects at that point. It's not unusual at all. this has been one of the better run projects that I've worked with here in 9 years. That said, I gave some areas concerns, 15 to 20 concerns. They got even by giving me five huge binders of things to look at, okay? And actually, the only thing that's really left is Stage Gate 3 on the process. We're right after that. LFO review, we redo the Stage Gate 3, and we do a readiness and ability assessment. And then I do things I did in the private sector for 10 years, is I make sure that these estimates are reasonable and that this is really doable, because vendors are more than willing to tell you it's doable and have you sign a contract. And then, even though it's fixed price, it somehow doesn't remain fixed price. So in the meantime, fortunately for them, they had money from StageGate 2 approval, so they were able to get a treasury loan to get us into... is it a loan? I'm not sure what it is, but a bond, whatever it is. And I'm an IT guy. And as a result, they're able to keep going until April or May. It allows John and I to finish the reviews. We recommended that the project go forward to the JLCIMT. We recommended that the money be unscheduled, except, of course, their $10 million, which they need, until we finish our work. Then we're going to finish up the readiness ability review. We've already done one walkthrough of it. Major weaknesses was there wasn't a project budget or schedule, and there's no way the LFO can approve a project to go forward. We don't have an integrated schedule budget. And then... And they're working with us on that, and we ask them to do what's called a control funding release plan, which is like what banks do when you build a house. They might approve $350,000, but they're only going to give you $25,000 for the foundation, and you've got to see the blueprints all the way through, and they check it all the way through the process. That's the process the state OSCIO has put into place. It's a good process. This organization has been following that stage gate process pretty much by the numbers.
Mr. Chair, if I may just please clarify, I just wanted on the Treasury loan that I wanted to clarify that was actually a cash flow loan because the bond sale scheduled for the fall did not happen as on schedule, and so we were relying on those funds, and so the bridge loan from the Treasury was just for cash flow, and it will be repaid with the next scheduled bond sale.
All right, Mr. Borden.
Mr. Co-Chair, if I may, I want to just go to the recommendations given the timing.
Please.
So in absence of a final comprehensive integrated re-baseline master schedule, the primary driver of the budget and final stage gate 3 approval, LFO recommends a very conservative controlled funding release of this recommendation. The recommendation basically provides funding through June 30th, 2016 only, at which point the agency will need to return to the emergency board or the legislature in 17 for additional other funds expenditure limitations. So a very tightly controlled budget here for this project. LFO would note, just as an aside, that the communications on some of these issues could be improved by the agency, but overall, as Bob said, they are doing a good job. The specific recommendations I'll go through quickly. There are three parts: budget, the IMT recommendations, and then a budget note. The first one recommend that this committee recommend to the Capital Construction Subcommittee an increase in the bonding authority for the project to $3.2 million. Increase other funds expenditure limitation for this project by $3.2 million. Increase general fund debt service by $1.2 million. Appropriate $34,683 for a general fund for the Treasury loan. And I would note that the agency will also have what is anticipated additional cash flow issues this spring, which they will self-finance. The fifth recommendation is to establish 10 permanent full-time positions for 1.31 FTE and reclassify four permanent full-time positions already on the project. Ask the Department of Administrative Services to unschedule $3.1 million of other funds expenditure limitation. Direct the Department of Administrative Services to schedule $3.6 million other funds and $6.9 million federal funds for the second quarter of 2016. The second part of the recommendation is for this subcommittee to adopt the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology recommendations, and then adopt the following budget note, which is a little bit lengthy, but that I'll read for the record. The Department of Justice is to report to each meeting of the Emergency Board and the Interim Joint Committee on Information Management and Technology at each interim meeting with detailed project status reports, performance against plan on the CSIS project. As part of the agency's report to the emergency board in May of 2016, the agency is to A, justify why an advisory steering committee is the appropriate form of governance, B, provide a detailed cost-benefit analysis of the decision to use a private vendor versus Department of Administrative Services data center, C, provide the justification for the indirect agency administrative charges to the CSIS project, which may need to be repurposed for and used for a general project contingency fund, which the agency currently does not have one, and C, report on improvements to quality assurance and agency status reporting as detailed in the LFO analysis.
Thank you, John. And that document that you're reading from is part of OLIS?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, would you accept a motion at this time?
I would. Thank you, Representative. What is your motion? Could you repeat exactly what you said?
No, Chair Shields. I would be happy to move the LFO recommendation today.
Representative Rayfield has moved the LFO recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so moved.
Thank you,
and I will. Yes, we did. Nope. We'll close the work session on the Department of Justice Child Support Enforcement Automated System. I'll carry that in full. No, we don't have to carry it. That's just, sorry. Got ahead of myself into the next agenda item. We weren't planning on taking testimony today, but Senator Gelser, if you'd like to say some comments for 1571?
I don't need to make comments if you don't need
to. Okay, thanks. Never get in the way of a bill passing, right? I will open a work session on House Bill 4075A then, if that's okay, Julie.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, committee members. House Bill 4075 establishes a statewide tip line for reports of threats to student safety. The line is to receive telephone calls, text messages, emails, and it must be connected to the other hotlines. It's to hold tips confidential, and information on threats are to be relayed to local service providers and school officials, in addition to the Oregon State Police and local law enforcement. The measure appropriates $1 million of general fund to the Oregon State Police for implementation of the line. Before implementing the line, the state police must develop rules on processing the calls, logging reports, verifying authenticity, etc. The agency's fiscal impact estimate includes costs for three positions to administer the tip line and contract service dollars to a third-party vendor to operate the tip line. Finally, the measure repeals a tip line that was housed within the Department of Justice more than 10 years ago that had been funded by a grant. The measure, the original staff measure summary, preliminary joint ways and means staff measure summary, fiscal impact statement, all those things are available on OLIS. And LFO recommends that the measure be moved to the full joint committee on ways and means.
All right. I have a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move the LFO recommendation.
Representative Rayfield has moved the LFO recommendation, which is to move House Bill 4075A to full Ways and Means Committee. Is there any discussion? Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Real quick, Julie, I attended the presentation about at the Police Academy about how they're using the hotline now out of Portland. Does this by passing this, are we authorizing the state police to look at contracting with that same private company or something, or what?
Thank you, Representative Wisnett. The state police has put out a request for proposals for vendors, and they haven't finished that evaluation process yet.
Thank you for that clarification.
Any further discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the measure passes. And any takers for full?
I'll do it.
Okay. Representative Wisnett will carry the bill in full. I'll close the work session on House Bill 4075A and open a work session on Senate Bill 1571A. Julie.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, committee members. Senate Bill 1571A relates to sexual assault forensic evidence kits. It requires the Oregon State Police to adopt rules for processing untested safe kits and to test them. The measure has reporting requirements, one of which is that by July 1st of 2019, they'll report back to interim committees of the legislature on progress toward entering these test results into the combined DNA index system, the CODIS database. The measure requires that every law enforcement agency in Oregon will have procedures about collecting, testing, retaining, and destroying safe kits. The procedures must include that kits are collected from medical facilities where the tests are conducted within 7 days and provided to the state police for testing within 14 days. All kits, including anonymous ones, must be held for no fewer than 60 years. And law enforcement agencies have to adopt particular procedures relating to providing information to victims about safe kits. Finally, the measure creates a task force on the testing of sexual assault forensic evidence kits. It outlines who shall be members of the task force and defines as its purpose to examine the process for gathering and testing these kits and to identify funding sources, grants, and other things that can help offset the costs associated with the process. There's a reporting requirement and a sunset on the task force. The measure and all of the associated materials are available on OLIS. And finally, there's a -6 amendment, which is recommended. It appropriates $1.5 million of general fund to the Department of State Police to add staff capacity to process safe kits. This funding will allow the agency to hire 9 positions, that's 4.5 FTE, for the forensic labs in the DNA and biology sections.
All right, money well spent. Representative Rearfield.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the -A6 amendments to Senate Bill 1571, dated February 22nd, 2016.
Representative Rearfield has moved the -A6 amendment. Is there any discussion? Representative Gorsuch.
Just very briefly, Mr. Co-Chair, this money is definitely needed, but next session we have much more to discuss in terms of proper funding, full funding for the state police. So this is just one piece of that, and a very important piece.
Absolutely. Can't think of money better spent than this. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so moved.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 1571 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Rayfield has moved Senate Bill 1571A to as amended to the full committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so moved. I will carry it in full, and Senator Gelser will carry it on the Senate side. Then do we need to assign a carrier for the House side now? Anyone from the House side?
Representative Olson
will carry on the House side. And we're all good, right?
Yeah.
I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1571A and open a work session on Senate Bill 1523A. Julie.
Or somebody. That's not me.
Mr. Chair, is that a Senate bill or a House bill?
Senate bill.
Oh.
For your information.
The committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 1523 relates to fuel storage facilities. The measure, fiscal impact statement, and preliminary staff measure summary are available on OLIS. The bill establishes the Fuel Storage Facility Compatibility Fund using any monies deposited from any source. The Oregon Military Department Office of Emergency Management is to use the fund to provide grants to install generator connectors on fuel sources at Oregon cardlock facilities. The grants are not to exceed $4,000 per cardlock facility, and the grant fund total is not to exceed $100,000. There is no appropriation associated with the bill. OEM can administer the fund and grants with existing staff and resources, and the Legislative Fiscal Office does not recommend amending the bill.
Representative Rayfield.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 1523 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Rayfield has moved Senate Bill 1523A to the full committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so moved. Senator Bates, will you carry that in full?
Sure.
Glad to. Anything else?
Yes. Grant. Oh, none of that.
I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1523A and open the work session on the Oregon Youth Authority Second Chance Grant. Linda.
The Oregon Youth Authority is seeking authorization to apply for a U.S. Department of Justice Second Chance Grant in the amount of up to $1 million. The funding would be used to augment ongoing efforts to refine the youth reformation system. Grant requirements focus on, among other things, objective assessments, higher-risk youth, using pro-social skill development and behavioral interventions, and fidelity to evidence-based programs. The application is due March 8, 2016. The 50% match requirement would be met with existing staff. There is no ongoing maintenance of effort as the grant supplements and accelerates current efforts. If you want more information, Dr. Paul Bilotti is here to talk about it.
Dr. Bilotti, great to see you. I don't think we need to hear from him. Does anybody have any questions about this?
No.
And who is the grant to? Department of Justice?
U.S. DOJ.
Okay. No, I think it sounds reasonable. Is there any discussion on this? No. Seeing none, we will approve the grant proposal. Do we think we have to carry that to poll?
Mm-hmm.
Anybody want to carry it to poll?
I should probably make a recommendation. The legislative fiscal
Ms.
office
Gilbert.
Recommends approval of the request. Okay.
I would be happy if you will allow me to move the LFO recommendation.
Well, get with it. All right. Wow. Representative Rayfield moves the LFO recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Impressive.
Any objections? Seeing none, so moved. Representative Rayfield, will you carry this in full?
Absolutely.
And we are adjourned.
Thank you.